ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. What a great weekend for the Houston Astros. Good, bad, and ugly is how we start the show each and every week. And we always let the Astros dictate what we're starting with based on if they win a series or not. And they lose a series. It's becoming a pattern, Blinkers. Anytime the Astros play a team that has a pulse, that has a heartbeat, they lose that series. Lose this series, fall in the rubber game yesterday. Lots of things happened in this series. We start with the bad and the ugly this week. 713-780-ESPN if you want to play along. What you got?
Oh, I've got plenty. I think the ugly is pretty obvious. The bad is Chaz McCormick. I mean, Chaz McCormick, since he's come back from his rehab stint, has been downright awful. He just hasn't been good. And when you know that you had a platoon of outfielders that were actually all playing fairly well, and Joey Loperfido gets sent down as part of all the moves they made with Chaz and with Abreu, McCormick's 2-for-19, 6Ks since coming back off the injured list, and he doesn't look anything close to what he was last season.
No, he wasn't even good in Sugarland. He's
or
been
San
bad.
Antonio.
Yeah, I forgot that was one of the spots he did his rehab. He's been bad all year. I do kind of admire that. Hey, I know that I'm not performing well, so I'm going to lay down a bunt and beat that out. Like, hey, I appreciate that kind of effort. I really do. Like, I feel bad for him. The Chaz McCormick. But it does create a quandary for the Houston Astros, because you mentioned Joey Loperfido, the name. And Loperfido's doing fine now that he's back in Sugar Land. He hadn't hit a home run yet, but he's still been fine. He's still getting base hits, things like that. Joey Loperfido could potentially start at two different positions on this team. First base, we know that. Now, he can't play first base. Well, why can't he play first base? Well, he probably would have made Jose Abreu look bad. People that I talk to that watch him play first base, good first baseman. Fine at first base. And Jose Abreu and John Singleton are both poor defensive first basemen. And you're going to tell me that Loperfido, which that's his primary position, grew up playing infield. First base is the second most games he's played at a position in his professional career after he left Duke, where he also played primarily first base. So that's a myth. Like, everybody's telling you, well, the Astros don't feel he was ready to play first base. No, he's fine defensively at first base. They didn't want him to play first base because it would make Jose Abreu look bad. It would make it a harder sell to bring Jose Abreu back if Joey Loperfido was playing solid at first base, doing good defensively, doing fine offensively, which he did. Now, the Chaz McCormick wrinkle in this thing does cause you some controversy. It does cause you some question, because now you have like two struggling bats that you need to get going. You need to get Jose Abreu going because they're reluctant to DFA a $19.5 million salary. And then secondly, if you don't get Chaz McCormick going, you're really in a hole offensively at two different positions, because you can play Yordan out there sometimes. Okay, cool. But now who's the DH? Okay, you don't really have a great answer there either. Like, John Singleton DH two games in which Jose Abreu played first. And, like, I love the John Singleton story. I'd rather John Singleton be on this team than Jose Abreu. John Singleton's a below-average offensive player in Major League Baseball. He's even further below average when you play him at first base, an offensive position, or DH, another offensive position. So you're really looking at two holes on this team offensively. Whoever's at first base, and then whoever's in left field or DH in which Yordan Alvarez does not occupy.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And I think that what you said struck a chord with me earlier, too. Look, it was admirable that Chaz laid down a bunt because he knows he's struggling, and it ended up turning out. But at the same time, I take that and I look at it from the organizational perspective of whoever the hell is making these decisions. And I think we all pretty much leaned in the direction of the Crane gang. But it's time to stop the nonsense of just trying to force feed us the bad players that are supposedly, cross your fingers and hope and look upstairs, maybe possibly could break out of this at some point in time and be better baseball players, and put the best 9 baseball players on the field right now, because you are continuing to suck. You are continuing to lose series. And with that, you are continuing to fall deeper and deeper into a hole that looks like it's going to be tougher and tougher to climb all the way out of if you plan on making the playoffs. So change some things for the betterment of the team.
I was thinking about this today as I did some stuff around the house. like, you're willing to lose some small battles in a season for the betterment of winning the war, right? To borrow a really weird, maybe even stretching, like, analogy here. And Dusty did this all the time. Like, Dusty gave a lot of guys days off when they were two or three games, either in front 2 years ago, behind in the division lead last year. And it drove people crazy. We've got to play our best nine. We've got to optimize winning and have this sense of urgency. Looking back, I think that Dusty was a really good manager. And there were times when I would get impatient with those off days and things like that. And hindsight 2020, I'm mad at myself for doing that. I trust in Dusty Baker. I trusty Dusty is the shirt that Paul Gallant was wearing today. I'm with you on that. But there's a certain point in the season where that mindset has to change. It's fine if you're leading the division by five games, in which you're willing to lose a few of the small battles for the betterment of winning the war. But when you're 7.5 games behind in the American League West, in which the Astros are, and the leader of the American League West, Seattle, is actually behind the third wild card in the AL, so it's not like you have the wild card that's really inside either. You're 7.5 out of the playoffs. You're 7.5 out of the division. So when can you eliminate that mindset? Because I'm in favor of we're willing to lose a few small battles for the war. Okay, I get that. In 162 games, you need to have that mindset. Dusty Baker, I think, handled that very well. But when you're 8 games below 500 and 7.5 back and you're 24-32, at what point do you have to stop losing those small battles? Because there are several small battles that are going on right now with this baseball team. First base, you mentioned that. That's like a small battle. Like, we're willing to lose a small Jose Abreu battle if he can revert to who he was in the playoffs, or you just get more information and you move on from him. Left field right now is a small battle. You're getting no production from left field or DH, wherever Yordan's not at, and that's costing you. So you're willing right now to lose the small battle of playing Chaz McCormick to see if you can get who he was last year. You're also having to deal with it in the eighth inning. You're having to deal with it right now with Ryan Pressly. You're willing to lose a small battle of Ryan Pressly, hoping you get him back by the end of the year, give you a better chance to win the war. Even catcher with Yiner Diaz. And yesterday was this first time all year in which Victor Caratini started back-to-back games behind the dish. First time Yiner's had back-to-back days off all year long. So you're losing that small battle trying to win the war. But at what point do you have to eliminate that mindset whenever you've fallen 7.5 games behind in the division?
Yeah, no, and that's what I was going to say, too. If catcher isn't already, it's well on its way to being a battle. And when you start looking at all those battles internally, I've said it and kept reminding everyone, this isn't the years past when Dusty had the luxury of being five games up in the division or comfortable enough with a good enough baseball team that he knew, I can give these, I don't care what anybody says, I don't care how hot a guy is, I feel like these are times during the season, these little idiosyncrasies that seem to be basically nothing or frustrate people, but it's going to help in the long run to get these guys where we need to go. And it worked out. They had a lot of success in the postseason, and maybe that was a product of it. But right now, you don't have that luxury. And with each passing game, when you continually let management pick the battle or you keep putting guys that are lesser than out there like Abreu, like Chaz right now, you're basically putting yourself further and further behind the eight ball, and it's not a position that maybe anybody's comfortable or familiar with being in, but you've got to adjust. You have to be able to make sure on the fly you say, hey, look, for the time being, Victor Caratini's my starting catcher. For the time being, whether John Singleton or Joey Lopevito, but someone's going to be my starting first baseman. I don't want to hear from Abreu, I feel like I'm really coming out of it. I feel like, the good things are coming. How long can we feel like we can be patient while you feel like you're getting it closer to being where you have supposed to have been the entire time you've been an Astro?
I think that's the conversation, is like, at what point do the Astros say, okay, enough of the small battles, we have to win the war. Like, where our war is coming now as opposed to coming later on in the season, which we thought it was going to be. So you have to reevaluate where you're at, whether you're reevaluating your personnel, whether you're reevaluating where you're at in the standings, whether you're reevaluating who's going to be in the lineup most days, what the depth chart looks like, et cetera, et cetera. That's the question. Like, we talked about it last week, sense of urgency. This is kind of the same premise of that conversation. And that becomes the question. When do you have to start doing that? I think you have to start doing it now. When you're 7.5 games behind in the division and you're 8 games under 500, I think that sense of urgency has to begin immediately. And that's why, you know, Jose Abreu hit the home run, probably bottom of week. You understand why Jose Abreu's on this team. Like, people mansplaining on Twitter why Jose Abreu's on the team is insulting. Everybody knows why Jose Abreu's on this team because he's making $19.5 million and ownership has pride and they don't want to lose out on their investment without exhausting all means to see if he can, like, has anything left. We all know. But there's a difference between agreeing with it and disagreeing with it. And again, eight games below 500, 7.5 behind in the division. Can you afford to continue doing it if you want to be a playoff team? That's one of the conversations. And then the other three we mentioned as well. Left field with Chaz. Catcher with Yiner. Eighth inning with Ryan Pressly. So that becomes the question now. Like, we've like laid the foundation of this conversation. The question becomes, when do they have to stop doing that? When do they need the sense of urgency? When do they have to put their best nine out there every single night? I think we're there.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is with the precedent that was anti-Dusty, with the way things have gone so far, we saw how long before Pena got a day off. We saw how long Altuve went before he got a day off. At a certain point, every situation is different, and you have to adjust accordingly and realize, hey, if we get back in this thing, and there's going to be times where we can figure it out, where later on down the road, we can get some guys some time off and give them some healthy days off. But for right now, all hands have to be on deck. Everybody has to realize if you have any aspirations of playing in the postseason, sure, we're still not to the halfway point, but if you get to the halfway point and you're still doing this, there's a pretty damn good chance you're going to be so far out of it, you ain't getting back in. So you have to adjust now to try, because it is still not insurmountable. It's crazy with as bad a baseball as they've played. And aside from going 6-1 against the A's, they're 20-34. They're a bad baseball team, and your record says exactly that. You need to adjust, and you need to put your best lineup on the field right now every single game until you start trying to cut into that deficit and play better baseball.
713-780-ESPN. Bad and ugly. We'll get to the good eventually. There was some good. And the Killer Bees are always just, we're always optimists in everything that we do. 713-780-ESPN. It's a busy show. Mailbag Monday. Good, bad, ugly. Jose Urquidy's going under the knife, it seems. Astros start a series with the Cardinals today. Caitlin Clark's back in the news. Is Alex Bregman back? Lots to get to. Lots to get to. But the bad and the ugly, what you got? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Beast on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
ESPN97.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, good, bad, and ugly. We're on the bad and the ugly still. 713-780-ESPN, HRB listener line. 713-780-3776. People are sending us their optimistic trades, including Fromber and Bregman. I'm not really ready to entertain this yet. At least not specific names. If we're talking about like philosophy and where they're going to be in July, depending on certain scenarios, I'm cool having that conversation. But when you start throwing out like Kobe Mayo from Baltimore and stuff, like, I'm not ready to talk minor league prospects and some of these young players. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Do you think Bregman has done enough in recent days to warrant a trade? Yeah, I mean, he's getting his groove back a little bit.
Yeah, but again, if you're trying to get back into it, don't you need that groove right now? Because you need someone at third base that doesn't disappear like he has all year, that kind of doubles up on how difficult it is that your corner infielders are huge disappointments that aren't helping you offensively. That's why it's so crazy from a fan's perspective. It's either the glass is ready to brim over with being so full that they win a game or they win a series and they're back. And then the minute that that they lose, even if they're losing one run games to Seattle or losing, you know, to a winning team like Minnesota, now the sky's falling so fast and so far that you've got to unload everybody right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's it comes to a line of demarcation. Like, you have to make that determination. Like, you're not entertaining trading Alex Bregman until you've made the decision that you're not chasing a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. And then once you make that decision, then it's okay, well, Alex Bregman's a free agent at the end of the year. We're going to move on from him. And then how much do you want to tear it down? Are you trying to be a contender again in 2025? And we dabbled in this conversation, you know, a little bit last week. I firmly believe even if the Astros are 20 games back on July 15th, I believe that they're going to trade their final year players, but they're going to think that they can be a contender again in 2025 and won't trade their players that still have a year on their contract. Like Kyle Tucker's a free agent after 2025. This year, next year, free agent. Framber Valdez, this year, next year, free agent. Justin Verlander, this year, next year, if he hits the vesting option, free agent. Ryan Presley, this year, next year, if he hits the vesting option, free agent. I don't think the Astros would trade that second list. Anybody who's under contract in 2025, I believe they would keep, even if they've made the determination that they're out of the playoff race in 2024, with the mindset of, we're going to be back in 2025.
I firmly believe as well that they think they're going to be back next year, but I also think that of that list, I think that they would consider trading Presley, but he's got a no trade, so that makes that one difficult. And I think
Presley could waive that, though.
He could.
I mean, he wants to close. Like, he doesn't seem very happy here.
Well, if that's the case, that'd be great. Then I think that even more so, they should look to trade him and see what they can get for him. And then from a Verlander standpoint, it's interesting because of the relationship with Crane, and because Crane went and got him the last time. Crane really firmly takes credit for going to get him the first time. But I think that he would have value around the league, and you'd probably like to get that contract off the books. But I'm with you. I honestly don't think that they're going to go very far at all in terms of looking to unload any guys that they have. I think because of the guys making the decisions, they're going to look to try and make trades that are going to try and make this team better to keep fighting for a playoff spot this year. And that's what's really scary about these guys in charge. It's one thing to say the difference between the eye test and analytics. It's another thing when you've got these guys that are playing fantasy baseball with big egos that are not going to allow them to accept for 1 minute that this team doesn't have a chance to make the playoffs, or they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I think that when we're going to have this conversation in a month and a week or so, I think that we're probably going to crush the Astros for having that philosophy. There's two different – I mean, there's predicting what the team's going to do, and then there is what should they do. I'm with you with your prediction.
Yeah,
but at the same time, what should they do is completely no opposite doubt. Of that prediction.
Absolutely.
I think we're on the same page when it comes to that.
Well, and I think, Jeremy, the window's open for them for me to see if they can still turn it around this year in the month of June. I think by the end of the month, when you look at the end of the month, the schedule isn't super tough, but if they aren't closing the gap, if they aren't picking up momentum, if they aren't stacking some wins, then you've got time before the trade deadline, but you have to have – someone has to have a rational voice in the room that can get to them and say, at least look at things and consider things, because we ain't going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope that is what happens. Hopefully they go on this incredible winning stretch, you know, over the next 4 weeks, and it's a little bit of a different story. Maybe they get to 3.5 games back or 3 games back, and it's, you know, a much different conversation. But – you do have to entertain the idea of, what if it's not? What if it's 7.5 now and 12.5 then? I think both scenarios are in play. That's how helter-skelter the Astros have been. And they've been mostly bad, by the way. Now, their talent, you would expect them to play better, but they're not. 713-780-ESPN. Joe Espada's managing is taking some hits on the text line. It's something that I had mentioned down as well. Presley still having the eighth innings, not something that I love. But then the one that he's getting a lot of grief over was not pinch running for Jose Abreu, who was in the seventh inning yesterday, tie game. He's getting crushed for not pinch running for Jose Abreu. Now, the ball was stung. I'm not sure that anybody would have scored there. That said, that doesn't mean it wasn't the wrong move.
The baseball play.
The right baseball move, it's hindsight 20/20 once you know the result. I thought they were going to pinch run for him there. It makes it especially bad when you know in the back of your mind that if it's a tight game late, you're going to pinch hit, which he did pinch hit for Jose Abreu in the ninth inning anyways.
Altuve, right?
So it's like, okay, you could have just pinch ran for him in the seventh. You're going to have a pinch hitter there anyways. That one's been the latest and greatest when it comes to knocking down the manager, Joe Espada.
I was convinced that that one way or another time was being called and Abreu was called back for a pinch runner. I could not believe that he wouldn't make that move, because that's the smart move. That is the baseball move that needs to be made in that situation. And you're right, it's magnified when you pinch hit for Abreu in the ninth anyway with Altuve. But at the same time, make the right baseball play. And you already know that everything's being scrutinized at a very high level. But that's not something that should be scrutinized. That should be what any manager in baseball knows is the right play to make at that time. And it wasn't made.
Yeah, I thought he should have pinch ran. Even if he pinch runs, does the run score? Probably not. So I'm not going to say it cost them the game, but it's another one of the curious moves that Joe Espada has made. I also found it interesting that in the ninth inning, he pinch hits back-to-back guys. He has Abreu, Chaz coming up, pinch hits Altuve and John Singleton. So, okay, yeah, Altuve pinch hit for Abreu. You want to get Altuve up in that spot, but you didn't have to have him pinch hit for Abreu. If you have confidence in Jose Abreu more than John Singleton and more than Chaz McCormick, then Abreu bats for himself, and then Altuve pinch hits for Chaz McCormick. So, yes, technically Altuve hit for Abreu, but you can manipulate who Altuve is coming into the game for. He told us in that moment that he has more confidence in John Singleton, because he brought Singleton off the bench to bat for Chaz, than he does Jose Abreu and Chaz McCormick.
And I think that's the difference between the decisions being made before the game starts and then in-game when they aren't being the Crane gang isn't able to interject, where Espada is telling you how he truly feels because he is a puppet, and he's making a lot of decisions prior to the game based on Jim Crane and his buddies. But during the game, he's got to do what he's got to do. And I firmly believe, like you do, that he believes more in John Singleton than he does in Jose Abreu. But when you look at, you know, the whole thing to me and the whole body of work, it just looks like, from the standpoint of Joe Espada, and I kept saying, look, the injuries, the players got to play the game, but he just seems to be kind of outmatched. He just seems to be like he's in over his head. And even the post-game press conferences, again, when he's talking about guys, I mean, Chaz is as bad as he is, and he's saying, I see him, he's close, he's coming out, I just feel it. I mean, he's trying to pump him up. I mean, everything is a positive, not a negative, and at a certain point, you got to call what it is. You don't have to be Ron Washington, but you have to at least say, hey, look, we're scuffling right now. The team is scuffling. Our guys are scuffling. We're trying to find ways, and we're looking for anything that can snap us out of it. But don't keep telling us that there's sunshine and rainbows when it's a whole lot of the opposite.
Yeah, I don't really care about press conferences, though. Like, I know where you're, I hear where you're coming from. I just don't care what a manager or a coach says. Like, I care more about action. Like, what, maybe he's going to throw him under the bus. Like, he's got to be, like, supportive in a way. I don't really care what Espada says press conference-y in terms of, like, my opinion of him as a manager, because they're all going to lie through their teeth. They're coaches and managers. But it's the actions to me from Joe Espada that I've seen after, what is it, 56 games that are like, I think
it's almost
like
he's
got
covering
it wrong
for Chaz, though, because he keeps putting him in the lineup. So that's why he's, like, overdoing it to the point. We get it, all right? You're going to keep throwing him out there, but it doesn't mean it's the right move, and you can't hide the fact that he sucks.
He does suck right now. There is no doubt about that. 713-780-ESPN 6030. I bet y'all still think Yiner's the catcher of the future, too. Guy can't catch to save his life. And sure as heck can be a consistent hitter. One of the worst approaches to the plate every at bat. You must have missed last week's show when we were saying that Victor Caratini should be the starting catcher for this team. And then me on Twitter at Jeremy Branham, where I've been exposing Yiner Diaz's poor framing and terrible ability behind the plate as a catcher. We even called him a tweener last week. So where you been, 6030? I know you've been here because you were texting.
Because we did talk about this, I was going to see if you saw this, but I was going to wait to bring it up as one of my nitpicky bads. In the Blanco start, in the inning, in the fifth inning, that was an 8 foul ball at bat.
Yeah,
he had two foul tips that were in the glove. The second one was blatantly in the middle of the mitt, and he drops it. And on the next pitch, a 2-run bomb. And that could have gotten Blanco through at least 5. And I'm like, okay, it's one thing to say the framing, and that has been a problem.
That's unlucky, though.
But I went back and watched. There was one of the other bats recently with there was like 14, 15 pitch at bat. And actually, Blanco had two different set circumstances like that. There were multiples where he could have – there were multiple plays for him to be made off of tip balls. He's not catching those either. I can understand it if it's a chance play. It goes right in the center of the webbing of the catcher's mitt.
I can't ever blame a catcher for not being able to catch a tip to a ball that's tipped. Like, it ricochets, it's moving at a different, you know, it changes the trajectory.
I said it was nitpicky, but
I think it's super nitpicky. That stuff's usually pretty random. Whenever you're trying to catch
it, stands out more when the next pitch is a bomb, too. It's just like, I'm like, oh, come on.
You're that far from getting out of the inning. Now, I do remember that specifically. It's just tough for me to blame a catcher on a tip ball. Like, I mean, that's luck. Like, you can't move the glove all of a sudden.
But that's what I'm saying. He didn't have to move the glove at all, and it went right into the center of the glove. And it was like, it's almost like he didn't close it. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of dribbles out, and I'm going, oh, my God. And I'm thinking to myself, please don't let that come back to haunt him. And on the very next pitch, he gives up a bomb.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. A couple more bads that I had. Yiner was on my list, even though the texture kind of took the steam out of there. We'll get to Presley later. Jazz, Espada. Any bads for you, Brian, that we haven't brought up?
Jake Myers didn't have a good weekend. I think he was 1-for-11 for the weekend. Overall, obviously, he's had a really good season, but another bad spot, an overall bad weekend.
Yeah. Crane signing a rookie manager to run a World Series contender ready to win is insane. Can you imagine his management decisions in a playoff atmosphere right now? I think that's a fair point. Thank you, Dusty, says 2920. You're probably right. All right.
I was critical of Dusty, too, and on a lot of things. But
I think he's talking about Yiner. Remember whenever he talked about Yiner and he said, we're going to thank him?
Me, yeah.
Thank you. You're right, Dusty. You were right. Another one for Dusty where you were right and everybody was wrong.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was critical of that one, too. And then remember Yiner had the emoji with the palms in the air kind of shrugging at the time, like he even responded to it. And right now it looks like, Dusty probably was right.
713-780-ESPN. We'll get into a couple of the goods. Also, I think I'm out on the Astros again. I think I've been teetering. I've been in, I've been out. If they win tonight, I'm probably back in again. But I think I'm out on them. I'm out on the Astros again. Why shouldn't I be? And there's a couple of goods from the weekend as well. 713-780-3776. The Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, right now, a word for Allstate Siding and Windows. Allstate Siding and Windows, best in the business, here locally in Houston, and here to help Houstonians. They've been in business for almost 50 years. They're dedicated to Houston sports teams, ESPN 97.5, and all of Houston. And they want to make sure that you deal with them because they are the experts at their field. And their field involves so much. It could be doors, but more importantly, it's windows. It's siding. It's all the things that help you to put that hard outer shell to protect your biggest investment, which happens to be your house in most people's cases. And the fact is that Mary and her brother and a family-owned operation. Mary keeps the headquarters and everything going back at the office. And her brother gets out there. He came to my house. We just had our windows replaced, and he came out, explained what we should be looking for, the brands we should be considering, the reasons why, and it was a no-brainer for us. We did it, and we are so glad that we did because, first of all, the curb appeal and the overall appearance of the house is greatly upgraded the minute that those windows are put in. But the more important things that you really care about are the ability to be resistant to hurricane winds, the ability to keep the cool in the summer and the heat in the winter, and the fact that you can really do a bunch to reduce your energy bills by up to 40%. And you could consider a job in which it both are involved, siding and windows. The siding, you don't have to do all the painting and the staining and all the maintaining. The siding is rough and rugged and tough and protected. And they can do it all for you. And the great thing is they'll come to your house and tell you exactly what they could do for free. They'll do an estimate. They'll walk you through it. We'll see if it's right for you. 832-204-1936 gets them to your door to tell you how they can help. 832-204-1936. They have all kinds of specials going on right now. 30% off all windows, $2,500 off a complete siding job. Just call them for the free home estimate. It costs you nothing, and you can learn really quickly how they can help. They are great people doing great things in Houston. Check them out today. Go to allstatewindowsandsiding.com.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yeah, I think I'm out on the Astros again. Why should I not be out on the Astros? 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to that after our goods. What goods did you have for the weekend, Blankers? Try to look for some positivity.
Well, for the most part, I think from the pitching perspective, the starting pitching and the majority of the pitchers were very, very good. I mean, Blanco is the one of the three starting pitchers that you can say wasn't a great start. But at the same time, like I said, if he's able to get through that fifth inning and avoid that two-run bomb, he's kept you in the ball game and he was competitive. He threw a lot of pitches. But when you look at what Brown did and Fromber did, they kept you in the game. They gave you a chance to win. They gave you quality starts. They did their job, and that's something that has been very consistent lately, that starting pitching seems to be getting better and giving you better starts.
Yeah, the Blanco start was annoying. They just kept fouling off pitches after pitches after pitches. Rocco Baldelli even mentioned about like how he loved his team's at-bats and that Blanco was really good. He was just a pitch away, like a bunch of different times, and especially the one that led to the home run. Fromber was great. Fromber was great in the middle of the series, carried a no-hitter deep into that game. He was fantastic. That was good, Fromber. That was great to see. And then Hunter Brown was mostly good yesterday. I agree with you. He gave up he had a little bit of trouble with the long ball, which he doesn't usually give up long balls. He's more of a ground ball guy. But, yeah, they got to him with the home runs. But still, three runs over six innings, you would take that from Hunter Brown.
No doubt. And when you think about it, this is what makes it so maddening to not, to your point about whether you want to throw in the towel or not yet, is because you beat their best pitcher. You beat one of the best pitchers in the American League on Saturday, and one of your best pitchers has settled back into being a very good pitcher again, and you showed that you are capable of competing with a good team, with a really good pitcher, on a game like that, and you won it convincingly, and yet you lose the series, you find ways to lose, and that's what makes it so maddening.
Yeah. Yordan was really good this series, hit the two home runs in the middle game. Yordan was actually fine everywhere except for the power. He entered the game where he took the two home runs with a 15-game on-base streak. He closed May with a 15-game on-base streak. So he's been helping offensively, just hadn't hit for a whole lot of power, hit a couple of home runs in the middle game against Minnesota, the one that they won 5-2. Like hopefully he's heating up because I think he can carry a team. 282 average on the year, 831 OPS. You would expect a higher OPS. He's been fine everywhere but slugging. The slugging has, for some reason, not been there for Yordan Alvarez this year, but he had a couple in the series. And then Bregman. You know, Bregman's heating up. That way you can trade him for something come July.
Yeah, I had Yordi and Bregs on my list because of the fact that it's nice to see Yordan getting back to where we were always accustomed him being. And Bregman, again, looking like here's another chance for him to kind of save and resurrect his season because he's been consistent. He's getting big hits. He's getting home runs. The power seems to be back. Those are all encouraging signs from an Alex Bregman. Now, can he maintain it? Can he keep doing it, or is he going to fall off a cliff again?
Yeah, fingers crossed on that. Any goods, Brian?
Seth Martinez had another good outing on Friday, and it was a losing effort, but two scoreless innings, and his season's been really good. And then Josh Hader, I mean, got the save on Saturday, and going back to, I don't remember what day it was in April, but going back to late April, he's only given up two earned runs over that time, so he's really starting to round into form and get his ERA to go closer to what you would expect from him over the long season.
All right, why should I not give up on the Astros yet? 713-780-ESPN. Alex says, Brian, I'm throwing up the white flag again, LOL. I'm an impressionable young man. I teeter. I go back and forth. Some days I'm in, some days I'm out. Right now I'm out. I'm out on the Astros. Why should I not be out on them? 713-780-3776. Can you guys talk me off at all? At all?
Well, I started with the fact that you take a look at their games, though their record is awful against, you know, anybody not named the Oakland A's, but when you look at what they did against the first place Mariners, when you look at what they did against a good baseball team in Minnesota, they were at least competitive. You know, they lose one run games in Seattle. They're hanging in games. Like I said, you beat one of the best pitchers in the American League on Saturday, and you did it with four home runs. You did it in a very convincing fashion. So they keep showing you reasons why you should stay in. And then when they find ways to lose in the eighth inning or blow a lead or blow a save or let it slip out through their fingers, it makes it more frustrating, maddening, and you wonder how. I mean, I find myself asking the same question, going, how long can I continue to believe they are going to figure this out no matter how good their roster seems to be on paper, because they find a way to piss you off more times than you are pleased with the way that they got a win.
Yeah, nothing there talked me into not jumping off the train when it comes to the Astros. Because, yeah, they'll beat Joe Ryan on Saturday, but then they'll lose to Simeon Woods, Richardson, or Richards, whatever his name was yesterday.
Houston kid, I found out. Huh?
Yeah, he's from, forgot. Yeah, he grew up in the Houston area. Played high school baseball in Houston, but can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. Can't remember where he played. Any reason that I shouldn't jump? I know Brian's been already.
No, I'm not going to give you a reason why. I think they're done. I mean, we're talking about all the, and Joel's right. There are a lot of reasons to say, like, hey, the pitching's, you know, gone pretty well. A few guys are hitting, and there's a lot of things to point to that are going well that, you know, when combined with maybe guys returning from injury or other guys getting it going, could result in a little bit of a run. But we also have to look at the other side of things that have gone really well that could be prone to regression. Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez haven't spent any time on the injured list. I would expect Ronel Blanco over the course of the season to regress to, you know, an ERA, you know, mid-threes. There's just things that we're seeing right now. I mean, Jeremy Pena for a long stretch of the season was hitting, you know, like 315, 320. That's going to regress down a little bit as well. I think there's as many things as we can point to that could turn in their favor. There's as many things to match that that we could point to where there's an area for regression. So 7.5, 8.5 back, no, I'm out. I don't think they're going
to
make it.
And I haven't thrown in the towel yet, and I've been trying to be positive, and I should be the guy trying to convince you of all these things. But the thing that is the variable now that has shown that it's even stronger than I thought it might be previous is now you've got the meddling of the Crane gang and Jim Crane and the guys that he hangs with more than trying to win baseball games. To me, it just has become very clear that your general manager and your manager are basically just front men for the guys behind the scenes, and the guys behind the scenes don't have a sense of urgency. They don't seem to be concerned with the fact that they need to put their best lineups out there. And no matter how good the pitching staff has gotten to be, not named Ryan Pressly.
What is your best lineup, though? Because you keep saying that. What is your best nine?
To me, you know what? Whether you figure out what you want to do at first base or not, it's either I would put Loprofito at one of those two positions. I would have him somewhere where he gives you a better offensive chance than the guys you're throwing out there. So, like you said, wherever Yordan is, then if Yiner has to be your DH and Caratini is your catcher and then Singleton's your first baseman, so be it. Or Loprofito is your first baseman, so be it. But those are the we know that Jake has solidified center field. We know Tuck's going to be in right. So if you say that Yordan's going to be in left, then I'm going to put Yiner at DH and I'm going to put Caratini at catcher and I'm going to put Loprofito at first base.
Because there's a lot of games for Yordan in left.
I know. Lately, there's been a lot of games. So if you put – okay, so switch it up then. If you want to put Yordan at the DH, then I'll put Loprofito in left. I still would like to put Caratini catching more than he's catching, though I understand, you know, we got to get Yiner right, and he's going to be a big piece. You got to get him in the lineup. I get that, and they can platoon. But that's my best nine. That's a nine that's better for me than what they keep trotting out there trying to get convince us is going to be a lineup that's going to win baseball games consistently.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's good enough. Henry, you can't be out on the Astros because they're the best team in Houston. I don't think so.
Are they?
I don't think they are the best team in Houston. I think since when would be last year when you were like deep into the playoffs, but then once the Texans had a strong year.
I'm mainly looking at 2024.
They haven't been the best team in Houston this year, no. I mean, the Astros had been the best team in Houston of the big three for a long period of time. The Texans I don't know if they passed them up by going to the divisional round, but the way that the Astros have performed this year they're not as good as the Texans have been. Yeah. The Texans are a better team right now than the Astros are.
This tailspin and rut that they have had going since the start of the season has turned the tables completely to kind of reset the whole deck and say, looks like going forward, it's Texans. And then the Astros, again, is it salvageable? Is it salvageable next year? But they still have enough talent to where you know they should be winning baseball games. And the Rockets are getting better, but they haven't made the playoffs yet.
Yeah, I have to go. I would go Texans, Astros, Rockets.
Me too.
In that order. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line 2920 says it's destiny. Eventually, destiny runs out. Maybe it's been destiny all these years, but it no longer is. 713-780-3776. Astros lineup is out today. It does kind of resemble the nine that you said, mostly.
No Joey.
What's that?
No Joey.
No, yeah, of course, no Joey. Altuve, Tucker, Yordan, DHs, Bregman, Myers bats fifth, Pena bats sixth, Singleton at first, Yiner catches, Chaz McCormick in left. So, Noah Abreu, cool. Like, I'm tired of seeing Jose Abreu. I don't love that Caratini's not catching again because I love Caratini catching more than I like Yiner. Chaz is struggling, but you got to pick one guy who's struggling that you got to play out there. Maybe you could have went with Dubon. It is interesting they moved Pena down to the sixth spot, but Pena, like Brian said, has been reeling. It seems like that swing and miss at sliders out of the zone is back when it comes to Jeremy Pena. So a spot of moving him down to the sixth spot behind Jake Myers tonight against the Cards.
Interesting. I watched the Cardinals last night, and as bad as they started off, they're not a bad baseball team, and they're going to give you a handful tonight. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play. I really believe that in the next 2 weeks, I don't know if I can even wait till the end of the month of June, but you're going to figure out real quickly here in the next 2 weeks if they have any chance at all or if it's over, because these are the kind of teams you're supposed to be beating.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Mason Wynn.
Oh, boy.
If he's from Kingwood.
Is he really?
Yeah, I went to Kingwood.
He's got a cannon of an arm.
Liverpool Forest.
And did you see the – he almost won the game. They ended up winning the game. But the, he hits a bomb last night with two outs in the ninth inning that goes over the foul pole. And every replay, and even ESPN said, oh, first of all, they go, it was clearly foul. And then when you look at it, you can't tell if it went over the pole or in front of the pole. And they were like, we're not sure. And then the umpire called it foul. They ended up winning in 10. Huh. But he crushed a ball down the left field line.
Yeah, they got some Houston ties. They have him, who went to Kingwood. They have John King, lefty, who's a U of H guy. Go Cougs. Matt Carpenter, Elkins.
Yeah.
And then Goldie, who went to Texas State, but prior to that went to the Woodlands High School. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Are you more excited for the offense or the defense when it comes to the Texans? It's the Beast on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
It's football time in Houston. Did this make it with the new marketing for the Texans? With the new kits and their new marketing scheme? Is this song, the song sticking around?
I don't know for certain. I can't see them getting rid of it.
It better?
Well, the only other time they tried another song, it was even worse. So until further notice, this has to stay.
I like football time in Houston.
It's fine. It was better than what they tried in the interim.
What don't you like about it?
I mean, everything.
You don't like a little Clay Walker?
I mean, drive you smooth, too. He can drive you smooth, I'm sure, but he...
Did he sing that song?
No, that's his line when he yells at his bus driver that they caught the
audio
on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember you telling me that.
Nuts. Yeah.
he drives you smooth.
It's a bit much. I think they could do a lot better, and I think that it ran its course. I get it when they first started the team and everything like that. It fit. You know, the whole Clay thing, part of it, great. But, man, it's past its prime.
Yeah, I don't. I like it. Maybe they could use it a little bit less. You don't remember what the song it was? Whenever they,
I don't remember the name of it. It was mid 2000s, and they debuted a different song. Like I don't know, maybe it was 06, 07. It was universally hated, and they got rid of it like 3 days
later.
And they put it up on the website for people to hear.
Did Chance McClain do it?
No, I mean doubt it. But yeah, I don't even remember what it was called. I'd have to Google it, but it was awful.
I mean, Chance did a studio session with Cal McNair back in the day.
I know. Yeah, he had a lot of cameos in that song.
Yeah.
And he did the Yao Ming song.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, that was a great song. I love that song.
Until Van Gundy killed it.
He killed it?
Yeah.
He didn't like it?
He doesn't like any self-promotion of any individual player. And the minute he heard it, he crushed it.
Yeah, I guess it does make
sense. He couldn't prevent the Yao movie from coming out, though, could he?
No, but he had a rule. Like, the marketing department did the billboards and everything like that. And right before they were supposed to go up, he goes, nope. If they don't have at least a minimum of 4 to 5 players in every picture on every billboard and ad, it's not allowed.
That's funny. All right, so 713-780-ESPN. Coordinators talked last week. So did Nico. So did Joe Mixon. I mean, they didn't really say a whole lot. Joe Mixon said he's excited. He thinks the defense is good. He thinks the offense is good. Nico Collins says he's very grateful for getting his contract extension, and he's a team player, is going to work hard, and, you know, the standard stuff you hear from players. But want to go back and forth on this, and we'll answer the question at 4 o'clock. And Hive, you follow along as well, 713-780-ESPN. I want to go back and forth between Slowick and Burke, because I think that the offense has, you know, the capabilities of being, I think they have a capability of being a top 5 offense. I think the defense can be a top 10 offense. So in the back of your mind, ask yourself which side of the football is going to be better for the Texans. And then let's see if Slowick, offense coordinator for the Texans, and Matt Burke, defensive coordinator, kind of, for the Houston Texans, sway that at all? Or are they move the needle for you at all? Here's Bobby Slowick first talking about the personnel and having upper echelon players on this offense.
Our job is to take advantage of what they're elite at. You know, how do we make sure that what fits them gets shown to the world and showcased? And, you know, we get a chance to use that in the pass game and in the run game. And, I mean, we got a quarterback that really gives us no limitations in that regard. We can do all kinds of stuff to make sure that, you know, whatever we're calling and however we use guys, we're making sure that they're doing their strengths. And that's really what it all comes down to.
No limit soldiers, the Houston Texans. They move the needle for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. But I'm already very, very, very excited about this offense. But I would think that with the offensive mind that Bobby Slowick has and the fact that there were plenty of times last year that he was limited by the weapons that he had to use, I expect to hear some, you know, that every day because of the fact that he's got so many upgrades going on.
Okay. First off, I like what he said. I don't like how he says we're trying to get the players in the best chance to have success. I'm very nitpicky here. I wish he would have said the team the most chance to have success. Like, he's like, I can eat. My job is to make sure all these guys eat. No. Your job is to make sure the team scores a lot of points. Are those things, is that correlated between the two? Not necessarily.
No, but
not
can
necessarily.
I make you feel better about it?
Yeah.
Maybe it means that he won't let Tank Dell block.
I hope. I don't know.
Want to put him in the best position to succeed? His best position would be anywhere but blocking on the goal line.
Yeah, I completely agree. He needs to stop doing that. Yep. Do I think he will? I don't know. I hope he does.
I think they learned their lesson.
And a little bit was Tank Dell, like, hey, I'm going to go help my team. Like, Tank needs to have a little bit of reservation there, too. I understand that. I agree with that. So that was slow. Like, it's good. Like, yay, no limit to this offense. It's what we want to hear. Yay, good, fantastic. Now, the pushback I wanted to have on you, though, is yep. – When were they limited offensively?
Well, towards the end of the year, when you were down on all the receivers, when you had guys out. Nico, I think, had been out. You had lost Noah Brown.
I thought you were talking about the playoffs when they didn't have Tank, because had a $24 million receiver and you still had Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the fact that when you can go across the board with your running back and all your receivers and tight ends, and you've upgraded, I think heavily. I think that opens up the playbook even more than trusting those guys to make plays like Noah Brown or like Mechie or guys like that.
Okay, here was Matt Berg talking about Danielle Hunter because the Texans defense added some players as well. He thinks they can be even better Hunter can be even better in this scheme.
We think that, Danielle obviously a history of success rushing the passer. We think that, hopefully playing in this front and stylistically can even enhance that. And, partnering him with Will and the other guys we have rushing, we're excited about kind of seeing how that comes to fruition. And
I think Matt Burke might be talking a little bit. He's a little Dana Brownie for me there. Is Danielle Hunter going to have 16.5 sacks this year?
I don't think so.
That's lofty. I would go under 16.5.
I think when we were talking about it previously, you could see that four guys could be flirting with and are around double digits, but I don't think that one guy is going to have 16.5, 17 sacks this year.
I think that's too high. I don't think that Danielle Hunter is going to have a better year, even if the scheme is better than what Minnesota did. So I think that was a little bit of a hyperbole from one Matt Burke, who's kind of the defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans. All right, back to Slowick. This is where he starts talking about the team a little bit more, which is good because I don't care about fantasy football numbers on the Houston Texans. I want victories. I want wins. No limits on how this team can win.
If we feel like we got to throw the ball deep to win a game, we could do that. If we got to throw it short to win a game, we could do that. If we got to run the ball 40 times to win a game, we feel like we could do that. So it just enables and empowers all of us to really do whatever's necessary that given week to beat the opponent in front of us. And everybody on our offense and really on our team right now is all in on that. And that's what's making this really fun.
Okay, I like that better from a team approach. That said, I don't know if you can run the ball 40 times with this
just
team.
Just Joe Mixon. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that caught my ear was he was adamant about if we got to throw it deep or we got to throw it short. And then not that there was a long pause or anything like that, but he kind of had a little reservation when he said we got to run the ball 40 times.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you get out to a huge lead and then you sit on the lead. Now, I do think this offense is versatile. It's versatile because you have three really good receiving options before you even talk about Noah Brown. Maybe John Mechie can have a really good third year, with his recovery. And then some people think that the running game improved with Joe Mixon over Devin Singletary. Pierce is still around, but Pierce was here last year and was a scheme misfit. And then you drafted Jordan, the rookie. So I do think that you're versatile. I do think you're more options. I doubt you run the ball 40 times a game and win.
I personally think they're still that room is not solidified for the year yet. I still think they're looking around and they're looking for depth and they're looking for a potential number two.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if they do that. Maybe in some of the June cuts or if anything comes open from waivers. All right, so did that move the needle at all for you?
Not really. Not more than I'm already where I'm at.
All right, so versatility on the offensive side. How about versatility on the defensive side? Here was Matt Burke talking about how they want their defense to be versatile.
At all levels of our defense, one of the things, it's just part of what we do. We try to be multidimensional to bring guys in, say, that can rush inside or outside. I mean, Daniil rushed inside some last year and stood up and moved around. I mean, corners that can play inside and outside, safeties that can drop down and cover, all those things, the more interchangeable parts and multidimensional talents you have, then it unlocks a lot of those things. So I don't think, you know, we're at a point in the year to, like, say this is how we're going to do that. But, like, all those options are on the table, I would say, John.
I like multidimensional. I'm a fan of that. I don't know if the Texans really did a whole lot of that last year. They tried. Like, they used Will Anderson in the middle a little bit in some pass rushing situations, but then they got away from that. Like, they weren't moving around there. They never moved Derek Stingley around into the playoff game against Cleveland. Their nickel corner was always their nickel corner, whether it was Tavier Thomas early in the year, whether it was King late in the year. Your safeties were the safeties. Like, in terms of position flexibility, we really didn't see a whole lot of that. Now, maybe they do want to be that. They just couldn't do it in year one of DeMeco. Maybe so.
Yeah,
maybe so.
That's what I was thinking when he said it was the fact of the matter is it was all Grenard and Will Anderson on the pass rush side for the most part last year. Yeah, Rankins gave you something inside every now and then. But now when you add a dynamic guy like Autry to the other two guys with Hunter and Will Anderson, you can come at it from a totally different perspective of being able to stunt and do things and move guys more because you have more talent.
I think they'll be versatile on the defensive line. I think DeMeco Autry is going to be the big factor there, quite frankly. Now, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of snaps for him to have outside, quite frankly, but I think he's very versatile. When I look at the linebackers, like, I think they're going to run a lot of nickel. So you're looking at Al Shire, you're looking at Harris. I don't see a whole lot of position versatility there. Now, Lassiter will be interesting if they think he's capable of being a boundary corner. I don't think Okuda or Henderson, if they start as one of your boundary corners, they're not really moving inside. And then Petrie and Ward really aren't moving around at all at safety either. So I don't really know what Mack Burke's talking about here, other than the defensive line.
Yeah, no. And again, and health is such a big concern when you're throwing Ward into the mix and counting on him. But I like the fact that Al Shire is going to give DeMeco a weapon that seems to be still in his prime, that is probably going to be more effective, that he can do some things with. But you're right. I have question marks about the secondary and the corner situation and both safeties, because quite honestly, Petrie's got to get better and get back to where he was too.
Yeah, his production wasn't very good last year. Like, he's obviously going to be a fixture at the top of the safety depth chart, but he wasn't that productive. Al Shire, I'm very interested about. He's going to be the green dot guy, based on everything I'm hearing, too. He's very cerebral, they say. Hopefully. All right, 713-780-ESPN. So hearing that, maybe we'll get to some more in a second. But are you more of the belief that the Texans will be better offensively or they'll be better defensively? 713-780-3776. Texans are an offensive team or a defensive team? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.